The very top of your notes, it says introduction, and notice it's in capital letters. I'm struggling with how to cover this, and it's my finiteness, not the Bible's problem. But I decided I'm going to go ahead and slog through this as the Bible does to some degree, so that we can... There's a reason why God first gives him the Ten Commandments, and then a little bit later he gives him a little more, and then he comes back and gives it way more deeply. And maybe that's the way we need to learn, just on a God introduces it, like the Ten Commandments, and then he gives us a certain level of information, and then he goes into more detail. It's kind of an incremental instruction, okay? And that's what it looks like he's doing with the Israelites here, okay? So just hang with me. We will see these again, and I've actually put some of the related passages there, but we're not going to exhaust it today, but we will come back in time a little more, okay? Anyway, look at the first section here. By the way, it's introduction to two Sabbaths and three feasts, okay? Verse 10, on your left-hand side there, and please follow along if you would, please, as I read here. It says, 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its produce. But the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, that the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave the beasts of the field may eat. In like manner you shall do with your vineyard and your olive grove. Okay, so just two verses. So the first point here, I guess I didn't number them, but the first one here, notice here is the Sabbath of years. Sabbath of years. Now this, if I'm not mistaken, is a new concept. God has talked about the fourth command. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Well, it was the Sabbath what? Day, right? Remember the Sabbath day. Well, this is a Sabbath of years. And they were supposed to let the land rest every seventh year. Okay? Anyone here? If you were in that situation then... I mean, wipe your brain clean. Some of us, it takes very little time. But anyway, if you were them and all of a sudden God said, not only the day, but now every seventh year, you're in an agricultural community, you have to let the land sit and do nothing with it for an entire season. What would you think? Again, if we're familiar with this, we're like, you know, it's in the Bible. They should tell the Israelites to, you know, man up and just deal with it. And it's like, well, you're telling them not to earn income, not to plant, not to provide for your family for an entire year. And you're not supposed to go out and what grows voluntarily. You're not supposed to go harvest that either. Now, you can, in another passage, you can go eat from it, but you can't basket it up and haul it in. Seriously. But I'm saying God says... Notice here it says you have to leave the land sit every seventh year for an entire year, an entire planting season. The entire year you can't do anything with it. Okay? He doesn't explain here other than he says the seventh year you let it rest and lie fallow. He doesn't tell you why he's doing that, but he tells you what the guidelines are, but that the poor of your people may eat, they can go in and eat from it. And what they leave, the beasts of the field may eat. Here you're feeding the scavenger animals and stuff. In like manner, you shall do with the vineyard and your olive grove. So your grapes and your olive trees as well are affected by this. Okay? Now, I put down what here? 6 years you sow and gather. Seventh year you eat from the field. So people can eat from the field, and actually they could too. Again, you just could not gather it in. What are some ideas? I guess I put them in your notes. I was going to wipe them out. These are at least some of the ideas. You rest the land. What? For what reason would you rest the land?
It produces better produce after a heavy year of just sitting there.
Okay, it produces better produce. Why? It re-nourishes the earth. You're not sucking all the nutrients out of it. So it gives it a chance to kind of catch up. Okay, and that's what it appears to be, that one of the major factors. It's not the only major factor, though. And I can't wholly explain it. It's a rest for the people, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. And it's a rest for the animals, like your farm animals. And not just once a week, but one whole year. That's called holiday. You know, that's like serious holiday.
Sabbath day wasn't a very holy day to them. It was a very same way it was treated. It was supposed to be treated with the same reverence, and it was very strictly enforced. Supposed to be supposed.
Yeah, it wasn't, but it was still expected by God to be obeyed, right? What are possible benefits? And notice you got it down there again. I was going to take them out, but sorry, my downfall. But, you know, just rest in general. And again, there's something to be said about resting one day a week, yes? We talked about that, resting and refreshing ourselves in the Lord, because it's the Lord's Sabbath, okay? Second, it renews you. Can you imagine having a whole year that you're not allowed to farm your land? So you have to do other things. And part of it is, by the way, it's a Sabbath to the Lord. So you are focusing an entire year on things of the Lord. Now you still have to eat and all of that, but you're not doing anything, planting or the sowing or reaping there. We talked about the renewal of the land. Helps to build nutrients. But think about it too. If you're not planting and harvesting, you've got time to focus on other things. And one other thing that I'll throw out here too is, if God tells you to do it, what does it make you do toward God? You have to trust Him, right?
Yes.
For what? Some of it's like, well, we're trusting God for the next paycheck. Well, why not trust God for the entire year of paychecks? Now, that doesn't mean they had no income. It doesn't say you kill all your animals, right? They're still feeding their animals, stuff like that. But you don't have one major provision, the major provision for eating and for your animals, because, right, if they're in any way, and I would think the Middle East would, you're feeding your animals off the grain you plant too. So you have to trust God to supply what He's telling you don't do, right? The difference. Let's go into Leviticus. Take your Bibles and turn to Leviticus 25. And again, I'm introducing you. We will not exhaust the passage, but we will come back to it a little later. But I just want to expose you to this. We're not, our goal is not to teach everything about it in this section, but Leviticus 25, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. Always bring your Bibles, right? Electronic or otherwise. There's a lot of cross references, and it's a lot easier not to put them all in the notes here. But look at, starting in verse 1, it says, "And the Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, speak to the children of Israel." By the way, God is telling him again later, in more detail. Okay? "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give you, then the land shall keep a Sabbath to the Lord." Okay? All right, so it says here, 6 years, verse 3, "you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather its fruit. But in the seventh year there shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, a Sabbath to the Lord. You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard." Now you get the field part because it catches up, but why not prune your vineyard? I don't see how that would help the vineyard at all. Now maybe it would.
Stress on the plant itself.
Yeah, maybe it does. And then it goes on to say here, "what grows of its own accord of your harvest." And we're talking about olive trees, grapevines, and have you ever gone by a bean field that's full of corn? You know, the volunteer corn. But, you know, that's all volunteer stuff because all the stuff that's spilled before. You're not allowed to harvest that. "What grows of its own accord," verse 5 again, "of your harvest you shall not reap, nor gather the grapes of your unintended vine." You cannot gather the grapes. "For it is a year of rest of the Lord, and the Sabbath produce of the land shall be food for you." Notice you can still eat from it. "For you, your male and female servants, your hired man and the stranger who dwells with you, for your livestock and the beasts that are in your land, all its produce shall be for food, but you can't harvest it. You can go out and eat from it, but you can't bag it and haul it. Okay. Verse 8 now, and you shall count seven Sabbaths, and this is even more. Hang with me on this. How long, how many years do you have to let it sit? Every 6 years, so the seventh year is a Sabbath. Well, what about this? This goes from crazy to nuts, okay? Look at verse 8. And you shall count seven Sabbaths of years. How many years is that then? 49 years. So every 49 years. And the time of the seven Sabbaths of years shall be for you 49 years. Verse 9, then you shall cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. On the Day of Atonement, you shall make the trumpet to sound throughout all your land. And you shall consecrate the 50th year. Are you following? Every 7 years is a year you don't plant, prune, or whatever. And then on the 50th year, it's another one of those. So the 50th year, you go the 49th year and the 50th year. You're not planting or harvesting. You cannot prune or reap. Okay? Proclaim liberty throughout all the land, inhabitants. It shall be jubilee for you. Each of you shall return to his possession, each of you to return to his family. The 50th year shall be a jubilee to you. In it you shall neither sow nor reap what grows of its own accord, nor gather the grapes of your untended vine. For it is the Jubilee. It shall be holy to you. You shall eat its produce from the field. So again, there's the idea. You can go out in the field and eat, but you cannot gather it. Okay? You'll return possessions if you're slaves. And by the way, it could be an indentured servant that you sold yourself as a slave. That's all the way down verse 39. Lending to the poor, redemption of property. All of those things happen in the year of Jubilee. Okay? You got that? So, it's huge. So, not only is God introducing it in Exodus 23, he goes into way more detail shortly thereafter in Leviticus. Okay? All the way through verse 55. I'm not going to read it all, but it's verses 23 and 24 through 34 is the redemption of property. I got it in your notes, I guess. You can see that. Lending to the poor and servanthood and slavery. Now, Leviticus 26, turn there because there's only three verses that I want to read. How big of a deal is it to God? Because this is amazing. For some reason, this is a hub point of obedience for God to let the land sit idle every seventh year. Okay? Notice verse 35 of Leviticus chapter 26, 33 rather. He says this, chapter 26 is the blessings and cursings, if you will. It isn't really cursings, but this is what I'll bless you with if you obey me, and this is what I'll do to you if you do not obey me. Verse 33 says, I will scatter you among the nations and draw out a sword after you. So I'll chase you away, and then I'll have people chase after you to try to kill you. And notice why. Your land shall be desolate and your cities waste. Then, verse 34, the land shall enjoy its Sabbaths as long as it lies desolate and you are in your enemy's land. So now you're carried away or whatever. And the land shall rest and enjoy its Sabbaths. As long as it lies desolate, it shall rest. For the time it shall not rest on your Sabbaths when you dwelt in it. So God says, for every year of Sabbath that you fail to observe the Sabbath, I will make it up by having you hauled away so there's nobody there to take care of your land. And I will catch up all the years that you didn't do it. So it isn't just for the purpose of the land. Does that make sense? It isn't just so the grapes don't get stressed or the olive trees don't. He will let it sit as long as necessary to catch up, he says. Okay? And you're like, so obviously this is more important to God than just, you know, functional. A lot of times people go to the Old Testament and try to find, you know, well, God commanded them this so they would be healthier, or God commanded. They always find the logic. And I'm saying the logic is not here. to let the land sit idle for decades. Okay? It's not there. So God said, if necessary, I will enforce the Sabbaths by getting you hauled off so no one's there to farm the land. Okay? Now, look at 2 Chronicles, verse 36. Let's see, Chronicles. 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles. Okay? Toward the end, you'll find it. But 2 Chronicles 36. Okay, verse 17. Notice this. 17 to 21, we're going to read four more verses. Therefore, he, God, brought against them the king of the Chaldeans. You ever heard of Nebuchadnezzar? Therefore, he brought against them the king of the Chaldeans, who killed their young men with the sword in the house of their sanctuary, and had no compassion on young man or virgin, on the aged or the weak. He gave them all into his hand, and all the articles from the house of God, great and small, the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king and of his leaders, all these he took to Babylon. Then they burned the house of God, broke down the wall of Jerusalem, burned all its palaces with fire, and destroyed all its precious possessions. And those who escaped from the sword he carried away to Babylon, and they became servants to him and his sons until the rule of the kingdom of Persia, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed her what? That is the sole reason God gives. Now, that isn't the only reason. Because the prophets over and over warned the Israelites of all kinds of sins in their life. But God comes back and says, right here, he lets people get killed. He let all of this stuff happen. And the reason here says, so that the land, until the land enjoyed her Sabbath. That is his timing mechanism. As long as she lay desolate, she kept Sabbath to fulfill how long?
70.
You get that? 70 years. Okay? 70 years. Now God said they're going to make up all of the Sabbaths. 70 years. How many Sabbaths is that? Huh?
7.
No, not 52. We're not talking weeks here. We're talking Sabbath years, right? Sabbaths of years. Yeah. Now, help me out here, because
take 7 off, and you get, take 7 off to 70, so you have 63 years.
Okay, and then you have 7. Jubilee years.
That would be.
Anyway, I know the magic number is 490 years. Well, 7 times 7 is 49. But the idea is then God allows them, and it was prophesied by Jeremiah. They were warned. And believe it or not, this is huge as far as knowing about Scripture. You think something as trite as Sabbath years that we do not observe as Gentiles makes a big difference. Okay? Ultimately, man, I'm
lost. I'm
what?
We're at the 1 year shy of 490 years, but it has to do with the prophecies of that Jeremiah predicted, and that we.
Right, but you're gonna have to give me details, or you're not helping me at all. No, I get that. I'm saying, how do you get there?
I'm trying.
So I'm saying, you're not helping me unless you give me those details. Anyway, God allows the Israelites to be in captivity for 70 years. By the way, that's the time of Daniel. And he prays with regard to Jeremiah's prophecy. And he's basically, they first were hauled off in 586 BC. This is the southern kingdom, right? And then others, that's when Daniel was hauled off. He was praying that God please use that year as our beginning year for 70 years. And then after 70 years, King Cyrus issued an edict that they could return after, and that was 70 years from that time. God let the land sit idle for 70 years to make up for those Sabbaths. By the way, like, I'm trying to think of the details because I haven't tried to parse it in that way, but there's still, they covered 490 years. There's still 1 week that was not covered. 1 week of years. Week, think of 1-7. Okay? And that is ends up being the time of Jacob's trouble or the tribulation period. How long is the tribulation period? 7 years, right? 7 years. And that's the missing year. God does 469 or whatever. That still not makes sense to me. 483 or whatever. But then there's 1 year that's left. 1 week of left. Week of years. It's 7 years. And that ends up becoming the tribulation period. So you're sitting there thinking, God, his entire timetable in some ways is connected to the Sabbath of years. Okay? And so there's still, after everything's said and done with Israel, there's still 7 years that have not been, if you will, paid for. And then God uses that 7 year period and the tribulation period to, again, the tribulation period works with the world, but it also very specifically works with the nation of Israel. The remnants is there, and ultimately all of Israel that's left at the end of tribulation is saved. Okay? So it's a huge thing. It's a big thing. If I can leave you with one thing here, and I have it done in your notes, and I'm not done. I'm just done with this point. The rest of them we won't take as long. But is it a great suggestion or a big deal? Is this a great suggestion or a big deal to God? And we've already kind of discussed it because it ended up being a huge deal for Israel even up to today. Because they have 7 years that God is still going to deal with them on. And I'll try and maybe... I didn't come with that idea, though I knew it just connected to it.
It shows you that when you think of what God said he was going to do with Israel if they did not do this, did not abide by this law, he would do to that. And then you look at the history that he did do to Israel because they didn't do it. It shows you that there was, you know, God was, this is my word. I mean what I say, and I say what I mean. This is what you're to do. And it shows you the degeneracy of the people of Israel at that time as how far away from God they have gotten. Because to them, apparently the Sabbath day, that whether it be a day, year, or the Jubilee, they might have done the ritual, but they did not. You know, they went out and did the sacrificing what they had to do in order to do what the law said to do. But they degenerated to the point where God literally took them out of the land that God said to you, but he gave them.
And let me relay that over to us today. Because I can look at Israel and say, yeah, they didn't do what they were supposed to do. But how many of us take what God says and think, well, I know he says it, but it's no big deal. Listen, if God says it, it's a big deal. That's kind of the point I want to leave you with today. And even though he goes through and he tells them exactly, if you don't do it, this is what's going to happen to you. Why do we as Christians today think if God says something, we can treat it as though it's no big deal? It will affect our own lives. It'll affect those that we love, our families, our companies, our business, our nation. If we ignore what God says as if it's no big deal. And by the way, Israel did just that, and our nation is doing just that. Just because God says it, it's no big deal. And Christians oftentimes do that too. Because God says it, it's no big deal. And we need to approach the Word of God with a sense of affirmation rather than indifference. Okay? It does make a difference what God has said. And even if we don't understand it right now, why God said it and all that, it still makes a difference. And by and large, God has explained it to us. It's not incredibly hard. There's some things that are hard. But everything you need to know, the Bible says in 2 Peter, God has given everything that everything that pertains to life and godliness through his promises. It's not hidden. And to ignore that is only to hurt yourself and all of those around you and your nation, your church, all that you help make up. Okay? So that's what I wanted to... I don't mean to interrupt, but I will. Go ahead.
Leviticus 25, verse 10, it says, "And you shall consecrate the 50th year." That's setting apart. That's making that year a very special year.
Yeah.
But it's like we don't set any time apart for God. And that's what the whole purpose of the Sabbath was, for Israel to set that apart for the Lord.
No Sabbath is no God, really. It is.
Exactly.
It's ignoring God.
Yeah, and what are we doing here in our country today? A Sunday is, and I'm not saying the Sabbath is a Sunday. The Sunday is a Sabbath, but when it comes down, we give.
A lot of people have no time for an hour a Sunday,
yes.
Let alone a day a week for God. Yeah.
Or, just think what would happen if our country would take one day a week, go back if we went to the Blue Sundays. And do this a whole year and do a jubilee, basically. Put these principles in action today. What would happen in America today if we give that to God?
And we're not saying it, we have to, but at the same time, the idea that we need Sabbath and the idea that we should have even extended long term times. That they're focused on God, not on other things, sure would be a profit to us. Let me move on, because I need to finish here. I won't spend a lot of time in the next ones here. But notice here, verse 12 says, 6 days you shall do your work, and on the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the son of your female servant and the stranger may be refreshed. Nothing really new here. In fact, there's much less spoken about this than there was in the Ten Commandments, but he repeats it because it's another form of Sabbath. So I call this Sabbath of days, right? So that when we think of Sabbaths, we're usually, and by the way, Sabbath means rest, Sabbath of days, and let the beings, and the reason I said the beings, I was going to put people, but God even says, let your animals rest. Okay? Every seventh day. So he just kind of throws that in there again because I think it relates to what he just said. So he's, if nothing else, he's saying, don't let this confuse you with this. Don't let the Sabbath of years confuse you with the Sabbath of days, because both are true. Okay? So God wants 52 days a year, and he wants 1 year every seven, right? 6 days to work, seventh day you rest, people and animals alike, and then the reason is refreshment. And I did that more in for the Ten Commandments when we did commandment number 4. Verse 13, "And in all that I have said to you, be circumspect and make no mention of the name of other gods, nor let it be heard from your mouth." Now this, I don't know if it ties in or doesn't tie in. So I put it in brackets. But he basically says everything I've said so far, and it seems like it goes all the way back to chapter 20. He says, make no mention. Don't even mention other gods. Okay? We're not to joke about other things. We're not supposed to mention other gods. We're not supposed to ponder them or whatever, okay? So that's kind of a parenthetical thought there. We'll get into more of that, but that definitely ties into commands number 1 and 2, right? you shall have no other gods before me, and I don't even want you talking about them.
Your word focus has a lot to do with that, because that's, you're focusing on God.
Right.
Nothing else is to take your mind off of God.
Right, right. Well, and definitely, you start talking about it, you're tempted by it too, right? The last one here is three annual feasts, and it's three annual feasts to God. And understand that these were directed to God. Okay? I'm going to read on the left-hand side, and then I'll comment on the right as we cover them here. Three times you shall keep a feast to me in the year. So far, so good, right? Feast, all right? And we think of feast, but no, we're talking about meal feasts, right? More than a meal, but it's a feast. Verse 15, the first one is that you shall keep the feast of unleavened bread. You shall eat unleavened bread 7 days, as I commanded you, at the time appointed in the month of Abib, for in it you came out of Egypt. None shall appear before me empty. Exodus 13, if you would turn there. This is where it happened. We've covered Exodus 13 already. But God had already said it, so he's just repeating this one, and then he adds two more. But starting with verse 4 of Exodus 13, it says this. On this day you are going out, this is the day of the Exodus, right after the Passover. It shall be when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, that you shall keep this service in this month. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. So the feast was at the end of 7 days. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and no leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. And you shall tell your son in that day, saying, this is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt. It shall be as a sign to you on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. And you shall therefore keep this ordinance in its season from year to year. All right? Now hang with me here. Notice, what is it? 7 days of eating unleavened bread and then a feast at the end. Why? They bring it up in Exodus to remember what the Lord did for me. Okay, so it's a once a year remembrance. So what's the Exodus a picture of? Passover/Exodus. In the Old Testament. Picture salvation, right? The blood and the, you know. So it's kind of like relating, I don't know, our communion is almost like that in a sense, but it's a remembrance of the salvation we have, right? Well, it's their rescue, but it's to remind them what God did for me, even as a nation. Even though I wasn't there, an Israelite person could say, he did it for me because that was, you know, I came from that group kind of thing. There's other things, too, that go into more detail, and you can see those Exodus 34:18 and Deuteronomy 16:1-8. We won't cover that because of time. Oh, by the way, it's the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Let me just put those in a different color. The first one is Feast of Unleavened Bread. That's the first one. By the way, why did they eat unleavened bread? No, why? Yeah, why? They didn't let it rise what?
They had to hurry out,
remember? They had to hurry. So they couldn't let the bread rise and cook. So that was the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And it has to do, you know, the Exodus and the Passover. In fact, it's connected to the Passover. It's right after the Passover feast. Okay? So Feast of Unleavened Bread, and I think it's unleavened bread is what you have in your notes there. The next one here is verse 16, and just lists half a verse for this. The Feast of the Harvest. Feast of the Harvest. Okay? And it's also known As you'll hear it elsewhere, but it's first fruits, the feast of the first fruits. And that kind of tells you when it happens. First fruits. And it's also called the Feast of Weeks, because they start counting down after that. Okay? So they count days after that for another one. And it says here, the first fruits of your labors which you have sown in your field. So when you first begin to harvest, that's the word there. When you, the first of the harvest is gathered. So the first, I'm going to put that off to the side here, but it's first. It's underneath. When you, your first trip to the field, they actually would go get some, and then they had to have a feast to the Lord. Okay? And by the way, there's more detail in Deuteronomy 16, 13 through 15. I'm going to read that real quick. Deuteronomy 16, 13 through 15. I'm going to read it as soon as I find it for time's sake. If I find it. Deuteronomy 16, 13, it says, "And you shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days." So there's 7 days when it's time to begin harvesting. Instead of harvesting, you have to feast. How's that for adjusting your priorities? "When you have gathered from your threshing floor and from your winepress, and you shall rejoice in your feast, and you and your son and your daughter and your male servant and your female servant and the Levite, the stranger, everybody, the widow within your gates. 7 days you should keep a sacred feast to the Lord your God in the place which the Lord chooses, because the Lord your God will bless you in all your produce and in all your work of your hands, that you surely rejoice." So it's rejoicing in your harvest and giving God credit for that, right? Which doesn't it? It's like in... We get paychecks now, a lot of us do, and it's like, you know, it's like the first paycheck of the year. You go out and feast, you know, or whatever, and it's to the Lord. 7 days. By the way, this 21 days of God-focused effort. The unleavened bread, I don't think it's all, you're not doing everything, you know, but there's 1 day of feasting, but you're reminded of it. But this, you don't do anything. You stop. The next one here is called the Feast of Ingathering, which you don't hear much, but that's what it's called here, Ingathering, okay? And off to this, I'll put the other words first here. It's called the Feast of the, I guess I've confused the two terms, the Tabernacles here. I must have gone to the wrong, I looked at the wrong passage. It's 9 through 12 in Deuteronomy, if you're still there. "You shall count 7 weeks for yourself." That's where they get the idea of weeks. I'm talking about this harvest one here. "Begin to count the 7 weeks from the time you begin to put the sickle to the grain. Then you shall keep the Feast of Weeks to the Lord your God with the tribute of a freewill offering." So you have to give from your hand, which you shall give as the Lord your God blesses you. "You shall rejoice before the Lord your God, and you and your son and your daughter, your male servant, your female servant." All the list again. "And you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and you shall be careful to observe these statutes." So you keep it a feast there at the beginning, and at the end is the 7 day one. And this is when the last of the harvest is brought in. So this is first, this is last. The Tabernacles is the last. Okay. Sorry, I was too far down on my notes here. So the Feast of Ingathering or Tabernacles. Harvest is the beginning of the harvest. Ingathering is the end of the harvest. First fruits, obvious. Tabernacles, they actually went out in tabernacles, stayed in tents and did this, actually, okay? A little bit more information. 3 times in the year, all your males shall appear before the Lord God. So they all gather together in a place where God will show them. And it's next to Deuteronomy 16:16, it says, 3 times a year your males shall appear before the Lord in the place where God chooses. And that was at the temple. So all the males would come 3 times a year, once for each of these feasts. So not only was it a feast, it was also a trip. Okay? So it's all the males. So I'll put it over here, all the males. And then they were required. It's interesting. Verse 17, end of verse 16. And they shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord your God, which he has given you. But notice, giving is not optional. What you give is optional. How much you give, but you have to bring something. Okay? So the idea of a free will offering, if it makes sense. But often as Christians see this too, giving is completely optional. It's like, really, it isn't. We're commanded to give, right? Just like in here, they were not told what to give. They were told they could not come empty-handed. Each feast, they had to bring something, okay? The last two verses, they sound like random details, but they actually connect with the feasts. You shall not offer blood of my sacrifice with leavened bread. So any sacrifice cannot be mixed with leavened bread, nor the fat of my sacrifice remain until morning. So I put it on the side, blood with unleavened bread only, right? You can't do that with leavened bread. What do you do with leftovers? You got to burn them, actually, is what they say later. You can't leave it till morning. You either eat it or burn it for these sacrifices. Then verse 19, the first of the first fruits of your land. Boy, that sounds funny. The first of your first fruits. Of your land, you shall bring into the house of the Lord. So he already told you you should bring the first fruits in. Now he tells you where. Bring them to the temple ultimately, which hasn't been built yet, by the way. It hasn't even been described yet. The tabernacle hasn't even been described yet. But it'll be the house of the Lord when that is built. And then the last one here, it seems like a totally random thing. But you shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk. What? Did you ever discuss that in school? What did they say about it?
I don't remember what they said about it, but I had a friend who spent some time in Israel, and he went to Pizza Hut there, and you couldn't have cheese on your pizza. You could have, like, the sauce and meat, but there's no cheese, and they were trying to see, like, we're not going to put any meat with any dairy products.
Just in case.
Just in case. So, they didn't.
Well, you should have cow cheese and goat meat, I guess, and you'd be fine, right?
They don't want to make any changes on it, so no dairy, no meat together.
Wow, okay. So, yeah. The only thing I could see there, it's kind of like I know it sounds funny, but it's kind of a moral thing. You know, why would you, and maybe there's health reasons too, and like I say, too many people try to connect health reasons for what God does, and it isn't necessarily there. He doesn't explain it as a health reason, but the idea is you're not to. It's kind of like the insult to injury idea. It's kind of like beating you with your own stick.
It could be too. It could be a pagan ritual that in their sacrifices they boil the goat in its mother's milk, and so they're saying don't do it with pagans.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's being a stab at
it. Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't explain it. It just tells you don't do it. Don't boil a kid in its mother's milk. You cannot use the milk of a mother goat to cook. The kid goat, right? So it's just kind of random. It's just like, but it, you know, obviously relates, and maybe it is a pagan ritual or something like that God was permitting. Questions or comments?